Hi there, and welcome to the Proud to Be of Rust and Glass podcast. Today's guest is Tyler Butler, a poet and artist living right here in Toledo, Ohio. Tyler's been a longtime supporter of everything of Rust and Glass, and I'm so happy that we finally got to meet today. It's funny, in this day and age, you make so many online friends, and it's this weird phenomenon where I feel like I've known you forever now.
Absolutely.
Just seeing you in the flesh for the first time after, what, 6 years of, quote-unquote, knowing each other?
Absolutely, of this parasocial relationship that you and I have been having since God knows when.
2019, maybe?
Yeah, somewhere around that time. Like, well, even before then, I remember seeing the Of Rust and Glass posts on Facebook, and I thought, oh, this is kind of cool. You know, I've been waiting for, like, an art magazine, and it's local? That's amazing. That's even better.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate all your support and you being part of it from day one.
Absolutely.
Let's just dive right in. When did you first get the creativity itch, so to speak?
Well, it just so happened that my creativity itch kind of came in, I want to say, two forms. Always was kind of interested in writing, especially in high school. In junior high, I convinced my mom to buy this small Scholastic copy of Edgar Allan Poe's poems, including The Raven.
Okay.
She was actually kind of mad at me. She wanted me to buy a novel from one of those book fair forms. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be this small, tiny, almost zine-like, you know, poetry booklet. And she was like, that's it? You know, I wanted you to get a novel. But her buying that for me and the introduction by Philip Pullman, who wrote the Golden Compass, his Dark Materials trilogy, that really opened my eyes and my mind to poetic format. You know, I thought if you had to write something, it was you had to write your essay about whatever topic you were working on in mm-hmm. school, or you wrote like a novel. And I had no idea that you could write poetry. You know, I think before then it was like Shel Silverstein, but that really cemented this idea of, I think I can write something like this. So I would occasionally write here and there, especially in high school. I started doing a lot of poetry and it just kind of kept building. I didn't get into painting until much later. It was actually also in high school and through theater, no less.
Okay. So you had a little bit of theater mixed in there, too.
Oh, absolutely. I always knew I wanted to be an actor or a director. You know, that was when I was a kid, my parents will tell you, one of my favorite things to do was to act out the scene where the Wicked Witch of the West melts. So I would just melt for everybody. At 3 years old, I was the boy that would always, I'm melting.
Just saw the preview for the new Wicked movie coming out that looks like a pretty good rendition.
I haven't seen any trailers for it, so it does look I loved Wicked. I loved the novel. I loved the musical. I actually saw that right before I went to college. So
amazing. So the trifecta of writing, of art, and of performance
absolutely
has always kind of been there for you.
Absolutely. It was I actually brought in my original watercoloring. We did an exercise for Oliver, the musical. It was my first musical. And my director, Andrea Schreiner, who still works at the Nightingale Auditorium to this day and is a wonderful woman, she had us sit down with watercolor palettes and some watercolor paper, and she taped up the paper with the first letter of each of our characters' names. I played Mr. Brownlow, who is Oliver's grandfather, in the production. So I didn't really sing. I was mostly in the chorus. I didn't really dance because I limped around with a cane as an old man. But we sat down and they would turn on, you know, the character's theme song. For me, it was Who Will Buy, because that's where we first get to know Brownlow and that relationship develops. And we would paint to music. And that was the first time I really did something interesting as a painting topic or painting subject. So, you know, that kindled a spark in me to paint something. And I took that concept home with me. I'm like, well, what else can I paint to? You know, I'll paint to music here, music there. I would, you know, at the time, I wasn't driving, so, you know, every time Mom would go to Michael's for, like, a craft subject for something for work, because she's part of the head of marketing over at HLS Orthodontics.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. And, you know, she would always do things like make signs, make posters. So whenever I had a chance to go to Michael's, I would take some of my lawn mowing money, and I would buy, you know, watercolor paper, Canson papers, you know, the Artist Loft palettes, nothing fancy, and I would just go home and I would paint. Since then, it's just kind of developed and it's kind of broadened. And in fact, you know, I brought in a couple of examples. I like, it's like show and tell. So I would paint to certain bits of music, and then on the back, I would write like poetry.
Oh, okay.
So it was just this combination of two things that I was really
into. The painting and the poetry inspired by the current sitting music?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very cool. You know, I would listen to the music and I would paint, and then I would look at the painting and I would write poetry to it to match the painting. Sometimes the music had some influence on it. That just helped broaden and sort of develop and grow my artistic talent.
Cool. You were for a while doing sort of smaller books that were a combination of your artwork and your poetry.
Oh, absolutely.
Are you still doing those?
I'm currently working on another one. That there's one project that stalled, and I had another idea to do another zine like that. I got into zine making. I think I saw like a documentary on YouTube about For the Love of the Zine, and I'm like, wait, this is a thing people do? You know, you don't have to go to Amazon and, you know, go through the whole, you can just buy a printer with some tax refund and go home and do it yourself on Photoshop or Adobe, whatever. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, this is cool. So like on a rainy day in March, I was, you know, it was gloomy and I was watching a lot of crime documentaries. And I think I watched Cruel Summer from Freeform. And I was just kind of like, you know, I'll just doodle on some pads of calligraphy paper with some ink and see what happens, and it just turned into a zine. I'm like, I like this. Let's do this.
I like it. I like it a lot. I know a lot of local poets do smaller zine stuff, and they take them when they go on road shows and stuff, and it's nice to have something physical in your hand that you know you started from this, and this is 100% your own creation.
Absolutely. I think in this day and age, it's becoming much more, I don't know, sought after to have something physical to connect to, especially in this world where we are so terminally online, so to say.
You know, it's becoming more and more electronic, like how we started out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I love the fact that you've kind of brought back this tactility of, you know, sharing art, sharing poetry, sharing words and stories. You know, it's wonderful to see that, especially on a local level. It's always been my opinion, I've never been a big fan of like ebooks and reading. I will, you know, if it's an article online, I'll do it. But I prefer to have something in front of me, something I can read, something physical. And to have that on a local level is just magnificent. And it also comes in handy for bragging rights. You don't have to scroll on your phone. Right. You can pull out a book from your bookshelf.
Don't have to dig in the pile of millions and millions and millions of other documents that are online.
Exactly. Like, oh, no, that's not what I wanted. You know, I can just go to the bookshelf and say, look, I was published. I'm published.
I love it. So as you've gotten a little bit older, as you've moved past high school, how have you evolved as an artist and as a writer?
As an artist, I would kind of do it as like a hobby when in between university, and when I eventually dropped out, art was, for the most part, still a hobby. It was something I would do. And when I started working at KUKA here in Toledo, I would kind of start doing art projects, not really thinking I would do it in a very serious manner. It was just something like, it's something to do after work, you know, something to get up out of bed in the morning when you've worked a long shift, you know, something, you know, doing something.
Something to ease the mind a little bit, something to use a different part of your brain from work stuff.
Something, you know, cathartic almost. Really, art didn't really become so much a huge part of my life until the pandemic hit. Like, before then, I was still doing paintings and still doing a lot of work, but it wasn't really serious. It wasn't really a drive. It was more just, you know, let's see what happens. You know, I've got nothing else to do. Everybody else is busy, and, you know.
And then we got trapped indoors and we had a little bit extra time, right?
Absolutely. That really helped me sort of focus even harder and try and experiment. And I just fell in love with the act of creation. And it just sort of became it was almost like a drug, almost a relief from everything that was going on, the uncertainty. I actually went to my parents' home during the pandemic because, you know, my mom said they're going to put us all in lockdown and I'd rather have you here than home alone by yourself. So I went over there, brought art supplies, and would just kind of hole up in the basement in between, you know, helping upstairs, you know, doing yard work, helping around the house.
Nice to have a little bit of company instead of being total isolation too, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I mean, we would occasionally drive each other crazy, not going to lie. But for the most part, it was good to have that old commune aesthetic again, you know, that camaraderie. And it was nice to be down in the basement and focusing on something and doing something. I experimented with cyanotype. That was the first time I experimented with assemblage and collage. And as I kept working at it, I noticed and felt that the works were becoming stronger, more cohesive, better compacted. You know, it just helped really refine and strengthen those muscles I needed.
Kind of similar with the writing processes where mostly everything you write is going to be garbage.
Oh, absolutely.
But it becomes less and less garbage as you do it more often, and you figure out how to make garbage much faster and much more efficiently.
I mean, absolutely. Most of my poems that I've submitted, you know, are poems that I wrote, like, at work or during downtime, and I'm just like, oh, this doesn't work. And I would, you know, I'll go through old notebooks, and I'll start finding them again, and I'm just like, okay, well, it's okay, but, you know, it needs this, it needs that, and it just kind of develops from there.
Can you tell us a little bit about your creative process, like when you are at your peak and working the best?
Let's see. When I'm at my peak most is, I would say, it's one of those lightning strike moments that kind of happens to you. Sometimes it's just going in there, going to the canvas and saying, I'm going to paint today. And you go to the canvas, you have no idea. Sometimes I have no idea what I'm going to do. Very rarely do I come in with a objective vision in mind. I may see a reference, or I may be looking through some art books that I've collected, and I'll think, okay, well, maybe I'll try something in the style of Ludwig Kirchner, or, you know, try something Matisse today.
Mm-hmm. With the Butler spin, though?
Absolutely, absolutely. And other times it's just, okay, I'm just going to pull out a canvas, I'm going to take a stick of charcoal, and I'm just going to start doodling. I'm going to see what's going to happen, and I'll, you know, I'll look at the doodles, I'll say, okay, I like these lines here. So I'll take out a spray down the charcoal, have it fixed onto the canvas, and I'll take, like, Posca markers. I'll start doing more outlining, or I'll go back in with charcoal. And if I, you know, just want to start over, just take a big old bit of white, cover it over. You know, it's just intuitive. There's very rarely, the only time I really had like a lightning bolt moment where I knew exactly what I wanted to paint was for that diptych I did of the two figures. You know, the one figure is sitting in a geometric pattern, kind of like skyscrapers against a blue background. And the figure in the front is, you know, done in black. I thought he was going to just be a one-and-done sort of thing. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go lay down. I'm feeling a little tired. I took a nap, and I was listening to Cosmo Sheldrake's Hawking, H-O-C-K-I-N-G. And as I was listening to that and sleeping, I had this sort of dream where there was a marble white Roman figure standing in this growing hedgerow, kind of going towards the blue sky. And I woke up, I'm like, I need to paint it. And I got up, shot down, and started another blue canvas again, and started working on everything. I worked on that for a solid 2 days, getting it to where it needed to be.
And so
I
was, you just blinked, like, and blinked and lost a few days.
Absolutely. And it was just, I need to paint this now. It was a total total lightning bolt moment.
Did it turn out anywhere near how you saw it in your dream or better?
I think it turned out, it wasn't as realistic as, you know, I saw it in the dream, but I was very happy with the result, with the vision coming to life right in front of me. And I still love it. It's one of my favorite pairs of paintings.
On a completely different note, as artists, as creatives, as just humans, we all, you know, have issues with things. We all have our struggles, whether it's competing interests, whether it's, you know, mental health problems. What struggles have you had that have sort of bled their way into your artwork, and how have you sort of overcome these things?
I am not very much a social butterfly, I will say. To be even more blunt, I am on the autism spectrum. So socializing and going out into new environments is always a struggle. Mm-hmm. I probably would have tried to be more outgoing in going to more art events and meeting more people, but it's a struggle that I continually face. I'm always very shy. I'm starting to get over it now. You know, trying to be more active in the art community, trying to reach out and not just push paintings out onto an online platform, but, you know, trying to, you know, reach out to other members and
be in person and in the flesh.
Absolutely.
And I'll tell you, as somebody who has also dealt with a lot of that growing up and who is now also always talking to people, I talk for my job. I go to events, I do these, you know, I coordinate people all the time. It doesn't get much easier. You just get used to it a little bit and
right.
you make it happen because you love the reasons you're doing it enough to
you
sort
make
of
do,
overcome.
You make do with what you have, mm-hmm. and you try your best, and at the end of the day, you can only be yourself. Mm-hmm. And really in this sort of path, this profession, this obsession almost, mm-hmm. there is no textbook way of getting out there. We are, you know, Jerry Saltz once said, you know, expect to be poor. And, you know, he has a very good point. We are not all of us are going to be the next Damien Hirst, but we can certainly try to be the, you know, take the influence of like Rauschenberg or these other artists that have come before, or Van Gogh, who only sold one painting in his entire life. Mm-hmm. We have to take that notion and do with it what we can. The important thing is we may not be making a lot of money, but I think, and this is especially true for me, we're leaving behind our own legacy. We're mm-hmm. leaving behind mm-hmm. a marker that we have existed, that we have created something, that we have taken the world around us, consolidated it within us, and given it back to the world mm-hmm. in a representation of our soul, of our own voice.
Yeah, I think anyone who's doing art is doing something that is grossly undervalued, both personally and communally. I mean, it's something that when you look at a place like Toledo, when you look at a place like, even if you go to a bigger scale and you go to some of the, you know, LA, New York, like these places are thriving, and it's because of the art. It's because that art is a living moment there.
Absolutely.
And it's something that you can't ignore the people that are involved with that. And when you are one of those people that are involved with that, you just can't ignore the art either. Whether or not you're making money, whether you're, you know, like you said, poor, whether you're eating ramen noodles, like you're not doing it for that. You're doing it because you love it.
Absolutely. At the end of the day, it's absolute passion. Mm-hmm. It's passion that drives mm-hmm. an artist to create. And I always say that if you're in it for the money, get out while you still can.
Speaking of, what would you say really fuels your passion for art?
I mean, aside from just this need for, it's really just the need for release is what drives me. It's this want and this desire now that I have seen how well constructed a piece I can create now. It's this desire to push myself further mm-hmm. or even find myself and express myself in a way that is unique to me and that carries that message across. It's just this feeling of sitting down and accomplishing something mm-hmm. every day that drives me right back. And there are days where I am just hitting my head against the wall, like, you know, oh my God, what am I going to do today? You know, but for every small moment where you have that, or every long stretch of days where you're just like, what am I going to do? That moment where you get right back into it and you feel it and you have lost hours of your day and it feels like minutes is the best feeling mm-hmm. in the world. Getting lost in the canvas, getting lost in the words, getting lost in your own world, in your own head for just mm-hmm. a minute and letting everything go.
Coming back out, I'm like, oh yeah, I still live in the real world. This is weird.
Then you look at the clock and you say, oh, I should have been in bed hours ago. I'm going to have a rough time at work in the morning. Right. Tomorrow evening.
Have you lived in the Toledo area all your life?
Absolutely. Born and raised. So there was like a small blip where I lived in Indiana with my folks.
Okay.
But that was a very small blip.
Was it small town Indiana too? Or
I have no idea. I was a baby when it happened. So I was born and raised in Toledo. Okay.
There are a lot of pros and cons to being an artist or writer in Toledo area. What makes you proud to be of Rust and Glass, and what makes you just so happy to be here and be creating in the Toledo area?
That we are such, in such a way, we are such a wonderful source of art. We have one of the greatest museums in the world here. To be raised in this idea, this culture of art, and to come from, you know, a place that is pretty small town feeling, but has such great big ambitions. Mm-hmm. What makes me really proud to be of Rust and Glass is just that from this small town place, I can feel like one of the greats and aspire to be one of the greats. I didn't need to be born in California or in the streets of New York. Mm-hmm. I am a Toledo person born and raised, and I have great ambitions, and I thank my city for it.
I love it. There's a lot of ambitious people, and there are a lot of supportive, ambitious people in the area, too. So that's a great place.
Absolutely.
And a great way to approach your
art. We are a great artistic melting pot, and I am so glad to be a part of it.
Right. We've seen just a small slice of that on this show, so and hopefully continue to see more of it.
Absolutely.
Do you have any like advice or any words of wisdom for people who might be into poetry, might be into art, but don't know where to start, don't know if they, you know, are on the right track, don't have any faith that they're any good at it?
The one advice I will say is, for starters, if you feel like you are not good enough, I want to say that's normal. I know that's a weird way of giving advice. But take it this way. You are not going to hit the ground running and be the next Neil Gaiman, Harlan Ellison, or even Edgar Allan Poe. You've got to start somewhere, borrow your voices, and just keep working at it. And you have to keep building that momentum, keep building that confidence. And when it comes to painting, at the same time, start small, get, you know, focus on one medium, but always be experimenting. If something looks interesting and you think you can experiment with it or find workshops that will help you teach how to use these mediums, take it. Take this opportunity. Always learn new mediums, trust them for a while, and let them speak to you.
Mm-hmm. And we live in a golden era where that's right at the tip of your fingers, too.
Absolutely.
I'm right now taking a video editing course, and I'm learning to draw, which I've never done.
That's awesome.
Like, sketched from time to time, but it's literally right there. If you want to do it, you can find somebody
absolutely
to help you get started, somebody to get your feet wet and practice it. And
absolutely. And YouTube is a wonderful place to start learning new materials. I got into oil painting by, you know, first of all, watching a couple people try Bob Ross tutorials. And after, you know,
speaking of one of the greats,
absolutely, you know, Bob Ross is just one of those amazing painters where I can just sit down. And even if I'm not painting with him, just watching him paint is just like, oh, wow, Bob.
I have to think the wine and canvas and all of those types of event spaces are at least partly inspired by Bob Ross and the way he approached painting and the way he encouraged everybody that you can do this. Let's just sit and do it together.
Absolutely.
And enjoy the journey.
Absolutely. It is so true that, you know, I actually did attend one of those wine canvas things. Here's another bit of advice. If you go to those wine canvas things, please, for the love of God, paint what they want you to paint.
Did you not?
I did not. I went, my yacht club hosted a wine and canvas event, and I painted a total abstraction because I was going to be the art rebel. I ended up throwing that painting away because it was absolute garbage, but, you know.
I'm sure there was heck to pay, too, with
Oh, yeah. You know, my mom and dad looked at me like I was insane, like, why would you go? Everybody's painting this big old beautiful lotus flower, and you paint, what is that, a pizza?
Maybe you were hungry for pizza. I don't know.
I don't know.
So Do you have any like presence where people can find you or check out your work or anything like
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. I have an Instagram account. I actually just changed the name of it before we came in. Horrible idea, but I was just like, you know, trying to say, you know, at Tyler11987. That's what it's currently showing us now. But you can find me at Instagram, at Tyler Butler Art. Okay. I'm also on Facebook as The Art of Tyler Butler. Other than that, I have no other website or anything currently, so that's where you can find me, Instagram Amazing. And Facebook.
Amazing. Well, we will definitely be sure to keep in touch and to go check out all your work and stay tuned for whatever projects you have coming up next.
Absolutely.
I'm sure they're going to be amazing, and I'm sure they're going to be completely, uniquely Tyler Butler.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show today, man. It was really great talking to you.
Thank you for having me, Curtis.
This has been today's episode of Proud to Be of Rust and Glass. Tyler Butler has the trifecta of art, poetry, and performing arts, and it seems like he has for most of his life. Tyler has always found a way to make his work, well, work. From painting to collage to poetry zines, he's always following this obsession or the next, and we're so glad to have been part of his journey today. Again, I am your host and producer, Curtis Dieter. Our executive producer is Chris Pfeiffer. If you want to join the conversation, check us out at wgte.org/rustandglass. Until next time, thanks for listening. Now go forth and create.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.